Well, it wasn't named the Cooks River until 1798.
Okay.
And it was Cooks with an apostrophe. But then the Geographic Names Board in 1973 decided to get rid of all these apostrophes, and now it's nonsensically the Cooks, plural, with no apostrophe,
okay.
River,
okay.
Which means nothing. Traditionally, it's been associated with Cook because he called the river a fine stream.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, Aboriginal people lived there for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Some Aboriginal people today are claiming that the river's name should be Goliari, which means the place of the pelican. There are pelicans there. There have been pelicans there. In fact, Cook noticed them and talks about them in detail.
It's such an interesting history, though, isn't it? Because it started off as this beautiful little, you know, gorgeous little river, and then by the middle of the 20th century, it was really a gutter. And now, in recent decades, we've started to pull it back into a much healthier. Take us through the history of it.
Well, perhaps we should ask the question which I alluded to earlier: where does it come from? Where does it spring from?
It's a good question. In a way, it's deprived of identity because it doesn't have a clear beginning. It theoretically, or it drains from around Potts Hill and Yagoona, particularly at a place called Graff Park, into the river via a series of drains.
Mm-hmm.
But because there are factories everywhere, there are railway lines, there are parts you can't get into, it's as hard to find the source of the river, really, as to find the source of the Nile was for explorers in the 19th century. And it's deprived of an identity because it doesn't have a clear beginning.
Yeah.
That people can say, oh, look, that's where it bubbles up like the Thames. You can go to a spot where the water bubbles up for the Thames. And it doesn't have a clear ending in a way because Sydney Airport has actually truncated the river. So the entrance is now Kaima, used to be over in Botany. So it's been completely altered.
Mm.
And people upriver don't tend to think very much about the very lower course of the river. So it's lost its kind of beginning and it's kind of lost its identity because it doesn't have an ending point either except indirectly through this.
Oh, you see, you've got us interested already. This is a real mystery. So tell us when the white settlers came to Australia, how many folk were living along the banks of the river and who were they?
Well, the Gadigal people were living along the river in the 1770s and 1780s, but by the 1840s there were very few of them left there. Most of them appear to have been caught up in the disease epidemics. There was some resistance. Pemulwuy, the famous Aboriginal, led what contention around the area and just couldn't be caught after he had speared John McIntyre, who was a government official. It was a very swampy area. It was an area that Aboriginal people loved because they could fish there and they got everything they wanted there.
Mm. It started to be used, obviously, because there were shellfish and all kinds of things to be taken from there. But over time, we didn't treat it very well, did we?
No, we didn't. We had really conflicting aims. We wanted it to be a nice place where the upper class really could live. It was called the most aristocratic part of the colony.
Oh, was it?
Tempe House, which you may know, which is at not the present day Discovery Point, sort of dwarfed by the huge buildings there. That is one of the finest Regency era buildings in Australia.
Wow.
And rich people lived there. Thomas Holt lived there in the 1970s, one of the richest men in the entire colony, who owned land all over the colony. But the problem was that people like him wanted to develop the area at the same time that they wanted it to be beautiful. So they had conflicting aims. They wanted to use the water for industry, but they also wanted it to be a beautiful place in which they and people like them could live. So those conflicting objectives continue to be a problem right down through later periods.
When was the very worst period for it, when it came to pollution?
Oh, well, I would say the 1970s was really the worst.
All right, well, let's go to a couple of calls with people with memories of Cook's River or have lived along it or played in it. Neil from Epping joins us. G'day, Neil.
Good morning, Wendy.
How do you do? You used to go prawning in the Cook River.
Well,
Cook's River.
A long time ago, about 80 years ago.
Oh, wow.
When I was not quite a teenager. And I can remember it was over there near the bridge at Undercliff, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I can remember wading around in the water, you know, with our torches and scoops and whatnot, catching prawns.
Yes, it was a prawning area. In the earlier days, it had been an area for oyster taking as well, but the early settlers quickly used up the oyster stocks. They dredged the lower part of the river. for oysters in the very early days in the 1860s. But prawning was done until the 1940s.
Mm-hmm. Bob from Castle Hill, you've got memories of the Cook's River when you were a kid too.
Yeah, my mum used to take me down there. I think it was in school holidays. She knew where all the cow pats were from the local dairy because all the cows used to graze along the banks of the Cook's River. Yeah. Round about the bottom, I think it was at bottom of Illawarra Road. And I'd have to hold a bag. I had to hold a bag and she'd shovel all these bloody cow pats in there, take them home to put on the garden.
Yeah. Oh, what a great job, eh, Bob?
I hope the garden was good.
But it was like a sewer.
Yeah.
Oh, this is in the late 40s.
And that's on top of the cow pats that you're pouring into a sack. Tell us how, obviously you had lots of industry, you had people throwing all kinds of stuff into it, it started to be treated like a sewer there. By the middle of the 20th century, it was starting to smell pretty bad and lots of pollutants. Was there a turning point? I mean, it's obviously not as bad as it was then.
It coincided with the birth of modern environmentalism. The spread of pesticides into the river with industry. There actually wasn't much heavy industry in the valley until World War II. But subsequently, over 2,000 businesses could send their waste into the river. Some of them were big businesses. And in 1973, there was a potassium cyanide spill, which killed many thousands of birds and decimated the fish population. Now we're returning to that after about 2010, and houses are starting to renovate. House owners are renovating their property, and they're looking out on the river now instead of looking away from the river.
We've got a text that says pretty much that. We live right near the Cook's River in Earlwood. We enjoy walking along the river, seeing the pelicans and other birds, but love to see it back to its glory days of fishing and prawning. So how far are we off it being returned to those glory days, Ian?
There's certainly a lot of fish in the river. Mullet can be seen jumping, quite regularly in season. There are fish up and down the river. Seals have come up as far seal has come up as far as Homer Street. Sharks down around Alexandra Canal. So the marine life has returned. There are lots and lots of birds. There are still problems. One of my illustrations in my book shows a dead pelican in 2010, from ingesting plastic, but could be botulism. So there are still problems. It will probably take 100 years for it to return to what it was like.
But it's heading in the right direction, you think?
Oh, yes, it is definitely heading. But a large part of that is due to good community activism from the Cook's River Valley Association, which has got some wonderful people today, and also cooperation from some government organisations, including Sydney Water, which has done some useful bank renovation in the last 10 or 15 years.